the volume.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey Google, lower the volume.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. It's gonna be bright.
Bonnie, can you hear me?
I'm so sorry. Welcome to everybody at the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments or would like to make during this broadcast, you can email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. I am sorry for that delay, Ira. I was just announcing our upcoming healing weekend on the mute button. Sorry, guys. So
okay,
let me just
now.
Announce that first. You know, you were here. I wasn't here. So in 7 or 8 weekends from now, we're going to be having our wonderful healing weekend in Irvine, California. We have special guests and therapists who will be there to help you with your healing process. We know it's going to be a wonderful, outstanding weekend, and we hope that if anybody is interested, you'll join us because this will be a very big step in your healing. You can write to me at bonkay@aol or go to my website at gayhusbands.com, and when you get to gayhusbands.com, there's a link there for the healing weekend. So send me a note. I'll be happy to get back to you. Also, I just want to announce that my newsletter will be coming out this coming week. There'll be some interesting articles in there for you to read. Thank you for your patience in waiting for it. I know it's long overdue, and it's a very, probably my most important issue yet. And I'll be sending it out. If you don't receive it in the next week, email me, because maybe your email address has changed or it got stuck in limbo in the internet. That often happens. Without further ado, I will introduce my dear friend and guest who's nice enough to come back here time after time, Dr. Ira Gelman. Ira, thank you for being so patient, and welcome back to the show.
My pleasure.
I know that women were waiting last week, but I told them you were having technical difficulties, so we would redo it again this week. And it's been quite a week for this whole area here with the whole weather being crazy. I know a lot of people had terrible weather across the nation. A lot of lines were down. We were having lots of technical problems as well. So hopefully things are starting to clear up for a lot of people. I'm going to talk a little bit tonight about some of the issues that women have asked me to ask Dr. Gelman about. And a lot of times people are very surprised to hear that their husbands are gay. They really believe there was no clue how to figure this out. A lot of them don't understand how it is that other people say, well, how couldn't you tell he was gay? We knew he was gay, which is like an extra slap in our face. Like, how could we have been so stupid? Or people think, well, you must have known. And then you say, well, why didn't you say something to me? And they say to you, well, why would we say anything? We figured you knew and you just didn't care about it. And we hear that very often, Ira. So I want to go back a little bit. We haven't really discussed this before on the show. Ira and I have known each other for many, many years. And I actually met Ira, you know, I was in my 20s. He was in his late teens. And we both knew my ex-husband, correct?
Yep.
That was, you know, how I first met you. And you can be honest with me because I never asked you this question, so we'll do it now. As far as my ex-husband, were you able to tell that he was gay when you knew him?
Not at all.
Okay.
I never even broke my mind.
Right, and that was back in 1978 when people didn't have a computer. We didn't have the general knowledge. I was a few years younger than me, like a decade younger. But even so, growing up in that age, the only thing I really knew from Ira was, first of all, straight and gay. I didn't know any in-betweens and shades of gray. And to be honest with you, I didn't know, you know, very many gay people. I knew some. I lived in California for a while. But it didn't compute in my head that gay people would ever want to marry a straight person. So from your perspective back then, was that something that wouldn't have computed in your mind?
Exactly. Yeah.
Even when you got a little older.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense for someone gay to want to marry heterosexually back then in order to have that as a cover. But, yeah, for the heterosexual, you know, person, that wasn't on the radar screen at all, that somebody would want to marry you of the opposite gender and be gay.
And also, knowing my ex-husband, he was this big, you know, kung fu guy at the time, right? Or karate, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he put, I don't know how much legit he was, but he would make jokes about, you know, gay people. He would, I mean, nothing mean, but he tried to act, and he did pull it off for a long time, this, you know, very macho, masculine type of image. So,
right.
Yeah.
And so, it wasn't our stereotypical gay person that we knew back then.
Correct.
For instance, like
yeah.
Paul Lynde, who, you know, was kind of looking kind of effeminate, or, you know, when Milton Berle would dress up like a woman. I mean, those were the images that we had back then. We didn't think of gay as being martial artists, football players, baseball players, athletes. Would you say that would be pretty accurate?
100% accurate.
And I think
and the interesting
other
thing
that
is,
threw me off.
Yeah, I was going to say that in the neighborhood that we knew each other in the Bronx, there was a former boxing champion named Emil Griffith. And Emil Griffith, I think he was welterweight and middleweight champion. I'm bringing him up because I had met him in the neighborhood once or twice. and he had like a reputation there was behind the scenes of maybe being gay in the boxing world. And when he fought a fighter whose name, you know, it escapes me, it was a championship fight. And at the weigh-in, the guy in Spanish kept calling him a very, you know, nasty name for somebody who might be gay. And when they had their fight, Benny Perez, I think was his name, and when they had their championship fight, he hit him so hard and in a rage so repeatedly that he put Benny Perez in a he put him in a coma and he actually died. And I know HBO had made like a movie or some documentary on it. So my point is that was Benny Perez gay? Probably, but you know, the fact that somebody would call him a negative name, you know, back in the I guess when that fight happened, it was probably in the 60s. We never thought that somebody who was like a boxing champion could possibly be gay. So it was very easy for people, you know, women in their 40s or 50s, 60s today, to have absolutely no inkling at all that, you know, a guy they're going out with possibly could be hiding the fact that he was gay.
Because we were socialized to believe or educated to believe that gay meant somebody who was attracted to the same sex, not to the opposite sex. So why would somebody come after us, you know, or want to go out with us or marry us if he were gay? And once again, I grew up before you, so I grew up when you were 18. When I was 18, you were only like 8, so you wouldn't necessarily remember this. But I was in California in those years, and there was so much sexual experimentation going on in California, much more so than the East Coast. You know, it was really out there. And it was not unusual to hear about, you know, orgies, which I really didn't hear about here. I'm sure they went on, but I didn't hear about it. And people experimenting and all kinds of combinations sexually. And even though I didn't partake in that, you know, I certainly knew about it. And it seemed like people were sexually experimenting a lot. So even if I knew that a man had sex with another man, I wouldn't necessarily call that gay if he went with a woman. I would say, well, he tried it. He didn't like it. That's not who he is. And I think that's what my train of thought would have been.
Yeah,
do you remember any of that?
I mean, like you said, you were a different decade and you were on the West Coast. You know, I never knew of any orgies, certainly when I was in high school or college. So, no. You know,
But you heard about it, right?
About orgies? I mean, no one I ever knew was in one, you know, other than like maybe reading about
it. I didn't know anybody in one, but I certainly hear about it. You know, it's, you know, something that was suddenly not a secret. People were talking about it.
Nobody was in one.
Yeah, on the East Coast, it was so different. As I say, the West Coast back in the late 60s was totally different than the East Coast here, which is why I had a really hard time adjusting to it and ended up coming back here. You know, it was way ahead of me, and I would never be catching up. But I still heard a lot about it, and I was exposed a lot then to homosexuality because people were very open in California. It was not unusual to see guys holding hands with guys and girls holding hands with girls back in the 1960s. And it was never an issue to me. You know, I had friends who were gay, and, you know, they loved me like a friend, but, you know, it was never going to be happening as far as having a romantic relationship. So it just didn't, like I say, compute in my head that I have somebody who's physically strong, everything opposite of what I've been taught about gay people who are soft and, you know, totally, this is what these stereotypes were, and that's what I bought into. So I just wanted to reassure women that if you didn't know, you don't have to sit and blame yourself that you didn't know. I mean, we would not be thinking about those terms, you know, back in those days or even in recent times, because I said that some women have come to me and they said, well, you know, how was I so blindsided? You know, I know more now. We know about gay people. We know there are people who do this. But I also asked Ira that if somebody is determined not to reveal what they are because they don't want to be gay, isn't it possible to pass for many years this way or forever?
Of course.
What do you think?
Of course. I mean, it's very easy, you know, because we're not expecting, You know, when you look at something, when we know one thing about a person, we assume that, you know, there's a bunch of things that are connected to that. So if a guy is presenting himself as being a heterosexual, the assumption automatically is, well, he has to be. So it's not even a thought in most cases, and especially going back 30, 40 years, that this person could be putting on a front. And, you know, people did it for a lot of reasons. They could have been self-hating, or they just were nervous about, you know, it's funny because if you go back a couple of decades ago, if a woman, you know, let's say had a female roommate and she was in her 30s, 40s, and 50s, you know, there was a term old maid that was around, but it wasn't assumed that she was a lesbian. If you were a guy and you're in your 40s or 50s, even if you just live by yourself, it was automatically assumed then that you must be gay if you're not married. So for most men, it was a way of advancing in the business world and never having to answer any uncomfortable or awkward questions about, well, like, well, why aren't you married, you know, at a certain age, especially if you're a professional.
I also say that there's a certain percentage of gay men who can have heterosexual sex when they're younger. I'm not going to say all of them. I would say maybe 20-25% can have sex with a woman. Other people say, well, you can force anybody to have sex with anything. You put a gun to their head. I know there are men who, you put a gun to their head, they still are not going to be able to do it. It's just for them physically impossible to do it. You know, to have an erection, to, you know, you'd have to first get excited. I don't know how much you'd have to be fantasizing to pretend that it's somebody else, but they're just not able to do it. But for those percentages of men that are able to do it, I think they're trying to fool, you know, Mother Nature sometimes more than they're trying to fool themselves, thinking, oh, well, I can get excited. I can fall in love with a woman. These feelings will diminish if I do. You know, these are just feelings that will change if I find the right woman to change them. And I think that percentage of men who are able to perform, and I'm not sure how that works, Ira. You know, you studied, you know, sexuality.
Yeah, but to try to find, you know, how often that happened, it's impossible. You know, when you made a good point, when men are younger, you know, when men are younger, testosterone is much higher. And, you know, as soon as a boy hits puberty, let's say he's in eighth or ninth grade, you know, there's an attractive looking girl that's sitting near him. You know, he could be sitting there with this erection, embarrassed, praying, you know, I don't have to get up. So, no, you know, nobody would see this. So, yeah, when someone is young, when a guy is younger, the ability, or just the phenomenon of sexual excitement happens much quicker and easier. So, yeah, if a guy is in his 20s and he, let's say, is trying to deny his homosexuality, he might be able to have sex, to have an erection, you know, once in a while. But after those once in a whiles, though, he's only going to be able to if he has a fantasy. But in his mind, I mean, a fantasy about having sex with a man. But he probably would think, even though I'm fantasizing about a man, if I'm physically having sex with a woman, then I probably am heterosexual. And a lot of people don't understand that. The sexual orientation is not so much defined by the behavior. It's really defined by the psychological, you know, attraction that the person has. So if a guy is having sex with a woman,
that?
But the... Excuse me?
Could you explain that a little more?
Yeah, if I ask the question, what's the most sexual part of the body? You know, most people would say, oh, you know, the penis or the vagina, the clitoris. No, none of those, there is no physical reaction that can happen in a male or female's body unless the brain is turned on. You know, boredom is one of the things that kills the sexual excitement of any relationship, gay or straight. You know, a lot of times people who are, you know, let's say you're heterosexual and you find out that the person you're married to or going out with cheated on you, and then you find out the person they cheated with is really not even anywhere near as attractive as the person, you know, they're married to. And you wonder, well, why would somebody cheat with so-and-so? Well, the big reason in many cases is it was just like the excitement and of the cheating is what turned the person on. It wasn't the physical appearance so much. So the mind, the brain, is the most sexual part of the body. So if a gay man wants to hide the fact that he's gay, which he's going to have to do, the way that he would be able to have sex is by totally fantasizing about another man. But in his mind, he might be thinking that that still is not a sign that he's gay because he's having sex with a woman. So, you know, there's no way a person is going to be able, especially as they get a little bit older, to be able to have sex if their mind is not involved in it. It's not just boredom. That's where stress can come in, being very tired and you just want to get some sleep. The brain has to be aligned with the body to create a reaction. And that's not going to happen if somebody does not have like a fantasy. Think about, you know, whenever somebody masturbates, just touching oneself is not going to get them excited. There has to be a thought. There has to be in the mind a fantasy that is getting the person excited. So a gay man in the beginning, when he still has lots of testosterone, would be able to perform sexually. But unfortunately, the entire time he's thinking about having sex with another man. That's who he's fantasizing about.
Somebody told me to ask you that they're not quite sure, once again, about this whole concept of fluidity and sexuality. Because today, that's a very, very prominent word, fluidity. That sex changes, and that accounts for maybe the labels of pansexual and some of the other sexual titles that people are getting these days.
All right, let me make something clear to everybody. Sorry for interrupting, because I don't want to lose this thought. Everybody wants to publish something to get their name out there, and I can't stress that enough. You know, for any audience I talk to. You know, I teach psychology, and a lot of times I get asked that there's like 2, 3, 4 terms that all mean the exact same thing. So why is it that there's different terms? Why? Because in the world of academia, people want to get their name. They have to be published. So if I can concoct, you know, some new cockamamie name, then, you know, I could get myself published. And sex always sells. So I don't want to diminish anybody's, you know, experiences, but there's a ton of bullshit, to just be plain English, out there that gets involved with every other day, you know, a new term, a new this, and a new that. And people think because they see something written in an article or a book, oh, that's proof. That must mean that it's true. No, it means garbage. So as far as the fluidity goes, it gets overplayed dramatically. There are people that are more attracted to maybe, you know, there's the word pansexual, you know. I don't know even know why we need to have a name for that, but throughout history, you know, somebody might be attracted, and it's not uncommon. How many times could someone be attracted, you know, to a person who physically may not be the nicest looking person, but maybe it's their personality, the way that they just carry themselves, that's like a huge turn on. So there's always been attractions to, you know, someone's personality. Today the term is, you know, pansexual. You know, somebody had to get that word out there to get their name published somewhere. So when people say they're confused, don't listen to any of the hype out there that's being passed off as legitimate science when it's just a bunch of gobbledygook. So I don't know if
so
my little rampage.
There's so many different, you know, things. You start with asexual, bisexual, infusexual. You know, they have all kinds of sexual things now. And a lot of times I have no understanding whatsoever. I mean, it was hard enough.
I mean, asexual is legitimate.
Transsexual.
If a person has very low testosterone, male or female, they're not going to be having a sex drive. If a person grew up in a very restrictive household where sex was a nasty word, they also may have an issue. So when someone presents that they have low libido, which would mean like low self, low sex drive, the therapist has to figure out, well, is this a physiological problem? Like, is it due to medication, especially for depression? Or does the person have some psychological issues about what's causing their lack of desire? Or it could be, is it a relationship issue? So there's not like one reason why somebody could be asexual, but obviously asexual does exist. And remember that asexual is different than celibacy, because in celibacy, a person is not having sex, but they want to. They're doing it, you know, maybe for religious reasons. Where with asexual people, they just don't have sex at all on their radar, gay or straight. And we said many times before, if a guy is claiming he's asexual, but he's watching male porn, it's 100% garbage. He is not asexual. Asexual people are not watching porn. Unless they're trying, you know, to get some sense of excitement, but then why would a guy be watching gay porn?
But why would an asexual feel he could pull off a marriage? I don't even understand that whole concept, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
at some
but you got to remember,
I mean, a woman.
Even though we're in the year 2000 and what is it, 19, most people are not educated about sexuality. You know, most school systems, and I think the audience knows that, you know, I teach at a community college, and I also teach, you know, high school kids, and I can tell everybody that I know firsthand that many people do not learn anything intellectual about sex, because either, even where it would be appropriate, like in a phys ed health class, let's say, many times the phys ed teachers, they're not even trained on how to teach sexuality. It's just something that's dumped on them, and then especially for the guys, it's like very awkward to talk about. So kids are not typically getting a real education about sexuality. And this is 2019. We talk about sex, lots of songs about sex. You know, obviously on the internet, there's lots of visuals about sex. But as far as getting concrete, legitimate information, there is a scarcity of that. It's just not out there.
How about one of our women brought up the fact that she felt that there's a lack of physical and emotional intimacy, as she calls it, when she was with her gay husband, that even though he's there, his body's there, his mind's not there, that, you know, it's very mechanical as far as having sex, you know, and it was very infrequently too, but when she did have it with him, it was very mechanical. Like, he didn't exactly know what to do, he just was doing what he thought he had to do. But she felt that with a lack of intimacy involved in their relationship, that's what stopped, you know, from the actual sex from being good. I mean, would you say there's some truth to that? That intimacy
but it's hard to say exactly what was going on. I mean, was he purposely, you know, was he trying to hide that he was gay and didn't enjoy being gay?
Yeah.
Well, then that was it then. You know, he probably knew he wasn't good at pleasing his wife. And, you know, if we're not good, if we feel like we're incompetent about something, we don't want to do it. And then when we do it, it's very mechanical. I mean, think of people, who, you know, playing a sport, let's say. If you don't feel competent, you know, the person does it very mechanically, playing an instrument. Anything, including sex, that we don't feel comfortable at, we're going to do mechanically because it doesn't feel natural. So we're trying to guess, like, what am I supposed to do? And in the case of a guy, I mean, you got to remember, if a woman is gay, she can fake it easily, because if her clitoris, you know, isn't excited, you know, a guy's not going to know that. But if a guy's not excited, obviously the penis is not erect, so you can't hide. And that's one reason, like, even with, like, older men, when men get older, I'm talking, like, it could be 60s, 70s, if they're having medical issues and they're not able to get an erection, they might have arguments with their wives or subconsciously in order to avoid having sex with them. And so they go to bed at different hours because they're too embarrassed to say, I physically am not capable of having sex. So now a lot of people are going to say, oh, why doesn't he just go to the doctor, get Viagra? Okay, A, Viagra doesn't work for everybody. But B, even with something like this, most men would feel incredibly awkward going to their doctor and saying, I'm not able to have an erection. I mean, that should be a question that a doctor asks a patient automatically, just to give the opening to talk about something involving sexuality. But most men would be too embarrassed to say anything about their inability to achieve an erection. And ladies, I cannot tell you enough how, for a guy, straight or gay, the biggest part of self-esteem is going to come from the ability to think that the man is a good lover, especially, you know, is able to please either a woman or a man. But if a guy is self-conscious about that ability, that's going to be the biggest blow to his self-esteem. So that's why, going back to this couple you were talking about, if the guy felt like he was not able to please his wife, on top of his not being proud of his, you know, own sexuality, that would cloud his interaction with her every single day, even when sex wasn't part of their interaction, because he still felt like he was this inadequate person.
I think sometimes gay men have a poor perception of what straight life is. You know, they're trying to imitate it and do what they think they're supposed to do as a husband because they've been watching enough television and movies to get an idea of how they're supposed to act. But I always say to my women that gay men don't think straight. And that's just not sexually. It's their whole thought process is different. I really do believe that gay people view life through different eyes than straight people view it through. And I'm not talking about a football game or, you know, social activities that you do, but just the perception, because the gay men who I work with, and I work with hundreds each year, they'll come to me and they'll say they were a good husband. And in their minds, keeping a roof over somebody's head and being there, you know, to help support the wife or family, you know, in a financial way, and going to the school's kids, you know, the plays for the kids and stuff, they feel that made them a good husband. It made them a good friend, but they don't get the fact that a marriage and a relationship is not a platonic, is not supposed to be platonic. They're supposed to be, you know, being in love, feeling that intimacy. I'm not saying forever and forever that, you know, you're going to have a wild, exciting sexual life, but you got to start with it. I mean, there has to be something in the beginning to build on. And yes, I know that there are straight people who lose their intimacy. You know, things happen, they get sick, they're on medication, but guess what? At least they had it there throughout the years until that time comes, so they build on the intimacy by having a sexual relationship. But when you're not having a sexual relationship with a woman, just like you just said, these men, their whole self-esteem is built on their ability to perform sexually. How is a woman supposed to feel when she's continually sexually rejected and being blamed for the, you know, the person?
Oh, she'll put the blame on herself. We know that. You know, I'm sure most of the audience listening, you know, the women have put themselves down, and if they were married to a guy that complicated issues, instead of taking responsibility himself, would try to dump it on them, which, you know, is a fascinating phenomenon, you know, for a person. But that's common. You know, it's like the athlete who's not all that good himself, you know, he'll put everybody else down saying how they stink, when he himself, you know, it was below average from the beginning. So yeah, the women are going to reject it. The women are going to reject it, and that's part of the shame, is that on top of having the marriage that's not working, they now have somebody who's manipulating them, and is trying to dump on them, which is really an evil thing to do.
And what happens in a lot of these marriages, because men don't have the strength to stand up and do the right thing, is they stay there and they're frustrated. And in their frustration, they take it out on the family. And many times, I would say the majority of times, they become very emotionally abusive because, you know, they're frustrated and they're angry. And all of a sudden, that wife that they were the ones who pursued and went after, now those wives become the, you know, keeper of the jail key, keeping them locked into a world that they don't want, even though they chose it. Do you see
that? Yeah, and you combine that with the longer somebody, you know, we're all creatures of habit. So if someone's in a relationship where, you know, physical intimacy is getting less and less frequent, like once every couple of months, you know, to like once every, you know, maybe a year, it becomes the new norm. And then people don't even question it anymore. And so it's very easy for, you know, secrets to be kept and people to lie about who they are. And then, you know, from the gay guy's point of view, you know, he still has the cover. Maybe his own family doesn't know that he's gay, so he doesn't have to explain anything to them. So the marriage for him is still working, which is another evil thing to do, because this is, you know, I know we've spoken about narcissism before, but this is now a person who, instead of being honest with his wife, he is using her. And you could argue we all use each other to some degree, but this is not to a little degree. This is like, you know, to a very large degree. You know, he's preventing her from leading a life that is one that she should be having. But he's selfishly keeping her to himself as the cover because it's working for him.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I always say, that these marriages, you lose yourself, you lose who you are, and you lose your potential because you're so busy just trying to keep things together, especially when you don't know what's wrong. You know, it's bad enough when you know what's wrong. But in so many of these marriages, the men will never be honest. You know, they don't want to tell the truth. Even when they leave, even when they're living with another man, they're lying to their wives because they don't want to come clean. There's some kind of network out there. And I know this from men who have told me, where they have meetings like Gay Fathers, some of the chapters. I'm not accusing all of them by any stretch of the imagination. But I do know for a fact that some of them will say, well, don't tell your wife you're gay, because that's only going to mean more money you're going to have to pay in court. Or that only means you're going to be limited on how much time you tell your children. It's never good to tell the truth. It's always going to cost you money. You know, so they keep perpetuating these lies rather than just come clean with it. And that just makes more complications. I always feel that, you know, the more you lie, the more you keep secrets, you know, the worse it's going to be. Would you agree with that?
You know, I would, but Bonnie, you got to remember, a lot of people, if the truth be told, probably would rather things continue being living with a lie than not, because then they don't have to feel embarrassed. I mean, we lie to ourselves a tremendous amount from the beginning. You know, people, I'm always amazed at how people, you know, we create our realities that we want to see. And I've had conversations like with marriage therapists where I've asked them, or, you know, the conversation came up where, you know, if your spouse cheated on you, would you want to know? And this, you know, this isn't a scientific study by any, you know, means here. I'm just giving you, you know, my own life experience, is that half the people involved will say they would want to know, and the other half say they wouldn't want to know, especially if it was in the past and it was over, because their attitude is, what good is it going to do me now? You know, I built a life
That's
with this
true.
Person. So my point is that for some women,
I mean,
you what?
I could see it in a case like that. But this is not going to be a one-time thing where you cheat. This is a
no,
whole
but
life.
I mean, if somebody finds that, hey, you know, I still have, like, a friend, hopefully, and I still can have the bills that are paid, and I don't have to explain to anybody, you know, usually when somebody gets divorced, people ask questions like, you know, what happened? And now that means the person either, you know, think about this now when we do that, as well-meaning people, the person we're asking either has to put out something very personal that they probably don't want to, or now they're in a position that they're forced to tell lies because they're so embarrassed or ashamed. So sometimes when we try to be friends to people, everybody, you know, we got to remember that. Sometimes letting somebody know that, hey, I'm here to talk with if you ever need to, that is a much more appropriate thing to say instead of the question, what happened? And I know a lot of us aren't even doing it to be nosy. We're trying to understand, maybe to help, but that could also be, as I said a minute ago, calling the person out to have to tell what's probably their most intimate secret, or then have to lie about it because they don't want to tell us because they're embarrassed. So,
right, and I always tell women, you can always say, I really can't discuss it, and you don't have to. Or you can tell the truth. You can say, my husband's gay. And I know a lot of women don't want to say that because they're afraid of what people will think. But once again, it's, you know, every woman's option. I feel it's always better to let people know. You didn't do anything wrong. Your marriage didn't fail because you did something. You had nothing to do with the failure of this marriage. It has to do with your husband was gay and doesn't belong in the marriage. But I do feel that there are some women who will stay in these relationships because they just feel some kind of comfort level. But that doesn't represent, I would say, about 95% of the women who I've met through the years. I mean, they may be staying temporarily or until they can get into better financial shape. But it's very hard to be friends with somebody who's out there. You know, when you love someone, it's really hard. It's one thing, it's bad enough having one affair. People can recover from that. But when you're with somebody who's constantly out there, you know, cheating on you, knowing that every time he walks out the door, that could be the next time. Maybe he'll meet someone. That's a tremendous amount of pressure to expect any woman to live with. And that's why, you know, I very strongly recommend to women not to do it. I mean, it's very
debilitating. Oh, no, I agree with you. I mean,
knowing.
I think, yeah, I think the majority of women that are in that situation would rather not. But then, you know, you have people that, you know, even heterosexually, you know, married, that if they kind of go their separate lives, they don't ask questions. They just figure for finances,
yeah,
you know, especially finances. You know, they rather
definitely
just stay together. It's easier. So it's an individual, you know, decision that a person has to make. And I think, but you and I are on the same line of thinking that, like you said, yeah, knowing that this person is going out and is going to be cheating on you is not something that is a mentally healthy place to be for, you know, the spouse who is the straight one. It's not healthy at all. And in some cases, screw the money because, you know, money is not the answer to everything. And, you know, self-esteem, in most cases, I would say, has to come in, you know, before the money.
Yes, and there are some, you know, gay husbands who are not that abusive. You know, they do their best. You know, they do look at it, they're married to their best friend, and they do try to do the right thing. And they're really not out there necessarily cheating. But I'm not saying that they haven't cheated, but, you know, maybe not as an ongoing thing. Maybe they have to relieve themselves. Maybe they go to a bookstore and to do that, you know, but they don't want to get emotionally involved with somebody because they truly love their wife and their family. But even in those best of circumstances, without knowing why your husband doesn't want to be with you, is not right. You know, you keep internalizing the blame is yours. The fact that he doesn't want to, touch you, be intimate with you, that he treats you, most of our women will tell you, at best, this is the best scenario, they felt like they were a sister or a good friend. At worst, they feel like they're the enemy because that's how they're being treated. And with a lot of sexual rejection, physical rejection, emotional rejection, battering down. I know that, you know, my ex-husband was very abusive whenever he wanted to avoid the whole sexual situation. You know, he would call me names. I'm an infomaniac. There's something wrong with me. And I was very fortunate enough that I had a past to go by. a lot of our women really don't have that kind of background. You know, this is their first relationship. They weren't sexually experienced when they got married. You know, I had previous marriages, so, you know, I knew what marriage could be. So I knew there was something off, and I was trying not to take responsibility, but even knowing that, I still felt that there was something wrong with me. You know, this man claimed he loved me. You know, he seemed to want me. Why is now all of a sudden, if I want to have sex and I'm 27 years old or 28 years old, why am I a nymphomaniac? You know, what is he comparing me to because I want to have sex once or twice a week? You know, that was what I thought was, quote, normal. But, you know, it's a lot of this rejection that just knocks you down no matter how strong you are. And you knew I was a strong woman when I first met him. But when you constantly batter somebody down, you know, it's very easy to lose who you are. And I think that's the problem. It's not just, you know, having sex, not having sex, having intimacy. That's a big part of it. But losing yourself to who you are so that you don't even recognize yourself anymore, that you're not the person you once were because you have no faith in who you are anymore because the person who's supposed to be loving you is not loving you. And, you know, that's the problem. Even in a straight marriage, people have ups, they have downs, but then they have ups again. In these marriages, they're mostly downs, and they don't get very far up because the man himself doesn't belong in that marriage. So does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Yes, there's a yeah.
And since you are, you know, somebody who understands sexuality, another woman asked me this question, so I'm going to pose it to you. Maybe you think I'm wrong, but I say that most men, normal men, not straight or gay, just men in general, they want sex. I mean, I think it's part of most men, their sexual
life. Yeah, and I want to go back to something I said like a half hour ago. So I was reading, I think it was the Wall Street, yeah, it was the Wall Street Journal just this weekend, and there's an article that some lady wrote a book on, you know, the new male sexuality. And it's going to, you know, from the review that I read about it, it talks a lot about, you know, the emotional fulfillment, you know, that men, you know, have, and that it's stereotypes. And I'm going to tell the audience once again, people want to get published. They want their name on a book. And a lot of times they will write gobbledygook. For most men, gay or straight, if there's an attraction to a woman, and she presents herself as being willing to have, you know, for a straight guy, if a woman is attractive and she is offering to have sex with him, if a gay man has another gay man offer himself, you know, to have sex with, most men are going to jump on that before you can say hello. So as far as this emotional connection for men, yeah, I'm not saying it's not there, but let's not overestimate it. Where for women, yeah, you have women that will jump at that, but let's just say nowhere near the number of men. So, yeah, for men, going back to, you know, the emotional part of sexuality, yeah, it does exist, but let's not exaggerate it. You know, for most men, sex is a physical need, and it's also a way for the guy, as I said earlier, to get, you know, a feeling of self-esteem.
But it is a physical need, as you said.
Definitely.
And I tell women that if your husband is not having sex with you, you know, especially in the younger years, then he's still having sex somewhere else. You know, women say he never cheated on me.
Well, it could be that
he
didn't
cheat on you.
Well, I mean, if he's gay, yeah. But you know, if a guy isn't having sex often,
I'm talking about if he's gay.
Yeah, no, if he's gay, he's not going to have sex often. Exactly. And because
no,
he doesn't.
But he is going to cheat on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, to different degrees, it doesn't mean he's going to have emotional entanglements with men, but he'll have physical attachments to men. He'll go to a gay bar, and he'll go to a bookstore, he'll go somewhere, he'll go on Craigslist, he'll go on Grindr. Are you familiar with
Grindr? No.
Grindr is an app that men use. And you put in where you're going to be, and then you get all these responses of how many men can meet you at a certain time. And I know men who have used Grindr, like in a restaurant, and they tell them that they're there. They put out the app. They meet a guy in the bathroom. They have a sexual encounter for a minute. And that's it. It's over. But they're in the bathroom doing this. And I know men who have done it. And at one of my healing weekends, we used the Grindr app to see how many men would, we said, married man on retreat looking for other married man. And we had like 9 responses in 5 minutes from men who wanted to hook up. So
Wow. For
these men, it doesn't have to be a sexual affair. It's a sexual encounter. They don't even have to know your
And
name.
Women aren't going to have that. I'm sure there's not, you know, from when a lesbian wants to meet another one, I would imagine that it's not just to have sex in a bathroom and say goodbye.
Exactly. Well, women are different than men in general.
Yeah.
But my point is that you don't have to have a whole relationship. You can just go have a sexual encounter and satisfy yourself. And those men who are married are happy to do that because they're not necessarily looking for any kind of romantic entanglement. I work with a lot of men who I call other men who come to me who tell me that they fell in love with a guy who's in a marriage. And I would say I've worked with maybe a couple of hundred of them over the years, and I've become really close with some of them because they just didn't understand the concept that they're being played. You know, they'll meet this guy in a bar, and they'll say, oh, I'm not sure if I'm gay, and, you know, I'm married, and I think I have these feelings, and so these guys fall for them, you know, and they feel that they're going to be the future for them because they're going to teach them that it's fine to be gay, and these other men, as I call them, fall in love with these guys who just play them for years and years and say, I'm going to leave, but you don't understand. I have the children, they have this problem, my wife has that problem. And they're seeing, you know, this other guy all the time who's hopeful that it's going to end, you know, with him, and it usually doesn't. I would say in 85% of the time, these men are just being played too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's all kinds of combinations of, you know, how people can, you know, compartmentalize. And can you talk a little bit about compartmentalization for people? How people can be living two different lives.
Yeah, I mean, we look, it's just, think of, you know, we show different sides of ourselves in front of, you know, different people. So when we compartmentalize, you know, for somebody, I mean, sexuality is only part of who a person is. So, I mean, a person, you know, could easily, you know, be faking that they're in this, you know, relationship, and they go to work and they have their life, and then they just, especially the physical drive, and let's not forget, sex is a drive, just like food. I mean, I guess, you know, you could argue you could live without sex, but you can't live without food. That's true. But a sex drive is still a very powerful drive to have. So they compartmentalize that in one little area, but then when that drive gets to be too big, they're going to have to do something like use that app you were talking about before, you know, or just go to a gay bar and host them. You know, I'm sure in any city a person, you know, lives in, there's in the underground community, you can find out like where a gay bar is, and have their urge dealt with.
And it doesn't have to be any more than a sexual urge that you take care of, right?
Yeah, and many times, like in the gay community, you know, you hear about gay marriage, but, you know, there's a lot of gay men who don't want to marry. A lot of gay men just want to have sex. You know, think, you know, physical appearance for gay men is very important. You know, the stereotype of a gay man going to the gym and wearing nice clothes and, you know, still looking trim and slim when he's in his 40s and 50s, it's not a myth, it's the truth. That's very powerful in the gay community. So for a lot of gay men, they don't even want to have a steady relationship with another gay man because they still want to have, you know, to play the field as often as they can. Now, I'm generalizing now. This isn't like I'm saying, you know, all men are like that. But, you know, to act like a majority of men, gay or straight, you know, want to just settle down would also be an exaggeration. Even think of the heterosexual world. One of the issues that, you know, women complain about is that when they're in their late 20s, early 30s, and they want to get married, a lot of men are like, no, why the hell should we get married? You know, I'm only 32, 33. I easily could become a father, you know, when I'm 40. Why do I want to settle down now when for the next decade I can still play around? And part of that just goes to the culture that exists, like, on college campuses, you know, more than ever before, where, you know, there's this hookup type of sex without any type of commitment to it. So asking a man, so you could argue, Ira, you're generalizing. Well, I am, but this generalization exists to a very large degree.
So what are your words of advice?
To women that are, well, it's what I've been, you know, every time we talk, I always say to the, you know, ladies, you know, stop beating yourselves up. This is something that you never grew up under knowing about. I certainly did not know about this. You know, we mentioned Bonnie's ex-husband. I knew him very well, and I never thought that he was gay. So it is very easy for somebody to lie and pass something off. And the first thing you have to do is not blame yourself because somebody lied to you. Don't beat yourself up.
Did you think he had a personality disorder?
Well, now I do, but back then I didn't. You know, back then, you know, he, you know, liked to stay, hang around a lot of younger people, you know, so he had extra prestige just being like a decade or 15 years older than everybody. You know, he was, call it a narcissist or a liar, so most of us are not. So we don't think that everybody is bullshitting us. So, you know, now when I look back, I could see all the signs of like, his, you know, mental issues. But back then, of course, I didn't. So, ladies, don't, you know, beat yourselves up on this at all. There's no reason for it. And I know Bonnie and I spoke briefly before, you know, the show came on about, well, does that mean that his entire life with you is a lie? Not necessarily. You know, he may still, depending on how accepting he was of himself, you know, have been a real person. But unfortunately, you know, this part of him was a lie, but that doesn't mean that he still was not honest, you know, or tried to be as best he could in other areas of his relationship with you.
Yes, I really do believe these men love women to the best of their ability in most cases, that they don't marry them thinking, oh, how can I make her life miserable? I think they're trying their best. It's just that they're trying, like I say, not to fool you, but to fool Mother Nature, hoping if they love you enough, those feelings will go away. Well, Ira, I can't believe it, but we're at the end of our show. And as always, thank you so much for the wonderful conversation. I'll plan on having you back here again, if you don't mind, in March or April. And
my
we will continue this conversation. And love to all of our women. Next week, we'll be here with Alexa Servididio, our therapist for healing. So please stay tuned, and I'll be in touch soon. Love to all of
good
you,
night,
and
everybody.
I love you, Ira.
Okay,
all right,
well,
love you,
too,
Ira. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, all right, good night. Bye.